listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
I done been through a whole lot. Trial, tribulation, but I know God. Satan want to put me in a bow tie. Pray that the holy water don't go dry. Yeah, yeah. As I look around me, so many motherfuckers want to down me. But enemy, what? That's not right. Pretty sure it's something like in a little river they found me. Anyway, but enemy gonna never drown me. And in front of a dirty double mirror, they found me. And I love myself. Hey, welcome to the Blackout Test Podcast. Your host, Rod and
Karen.
And we are in the house on a Tuesday. Tuesday before our Game of Thrones recap, which will be tomorrow at 7 with Miss Smart from Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine. So it should be a pretty fun show. Also, the show is able to be found on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search the Blackout Tips. Leave us 5-star reviews and we'll read them on the air as long as they're nice. The official weapon of the show is
the taser,
and the unofficial sport
is bullet ball
and bullet ball extreme. And today's podcast isn't brought to you by anybody, guys. Okay, all right, it's just a regular ass podcast. Hope you're ready to get into some podcasting. I really should shout out a sponsor. You know what? Tweaked Audio. There you guys go. Tweaked Audio is the maker of some fine handcrafted earbuds. If you're listening to this, you're probably listening to this on some earbuds.
Yes, you are.
You know, you're probably, and they got all kinds. I mean, they got the kind that come with like the wireless joints. They got the kind that come with mics. They fit in your ears. They got the around the ears. They got the Hegones. They got all kinds the Hellers. They have I feel like some black people must work there for the name of these, but I feel like you should go there, put in code TBGWT. Why? Because you get, I mean, and that's not, put in code TBGWT. Why should you do that? Because you get 33% off of your headphones plus free shipping on your order, and it comes with a lifetime warranty. TweakedAudio.com. make sure you hit them up. Get your mic and non-mic versions of all these different headsets and flourish. Okay,
it's so worth it, y'all, because Lord knows I have used it. I have tested that warranty. Roger can tell you it works.
Yep, if you test something up, you just let them know and you send it back, you know. They'll send you a new pair. So yeah, it's coming with that warranty. Make sure you read the warranty, but it's out there for you.
Yeah, for, you know, because some of you listening to us right now, I bet you be fading in one ear and out the other. So go ahead and get you some new headphones.
All right, let's get into the news. All kinds of news is happening. Let's see, what should we talk about first? I guess we can keep it sexy like we've been doing the last few shows.
Okay.
Usher's side chick accuser wants $40 million now.
Woo! The cost of the brick went up.
That's right. She wants $40 million because she tested positive for herpes now. And you know what? I understand.
I understand too, because she's like, I might not have fucked you if I would have known this.
And allegedly, the is allegedly the bridesmaid of his wife, of his ex-wife Tamika Raymond, is the woman that's accusing him. That's pretty epic. A bridesmaid, at least it wasn't a maid of honor, I guess.
Come on.
But still, a bridesmaid.
Come on.
Usher didn't have no ooh, I know Tamika somewhere sitting around in the house just angry as hell right
now. Me outside, how about that?
And I wouldn't blame her. Wouldn't blame her at all.
Right, I bet you said the best shit I could have ever did was leave you.
Damn, Usher, that's messy as fuck, bro.
Right.
But yeah, apparently, that's what, at least she claims to. A woman sued him for $10 million. That woman claims she slept with Usher unprotected in April and he didn't disclose his diagnosis. Now according to TMZ, the same woman allegedly received a positive herpes test result. She wants a whopping $20 million. The $20 million is for negligence, battery, and emotional distress. Oh, the title said 40, but it sounded like 20. So far no comment from Usher nor his wife Grace Miguel, who must be pissed off to hear about this.
Woo, you know she is livid.
And you know Grace know if he got herpes or not, so she know if it's true.
Right, and she might be positive. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, she might not have disclosed it.
Right. Mm-mm-mm. The evil that is done in the dark will one day come to light. That's my old grandma, black woman, saying for the day.
And you talk about me being country.
What is done in the sheets will be done in the streets one day. That's what I say. Speaking of streets and the sheets, Rick Ross talked about, he got interviewed, and he was talking about on the Breakfast Club, the home of ignorance, where people go to do messy ass interviews or say shit that pisses everybody off.
Right.
Feel like that's what should be underneath it. Anyway, he apparently said that the only thing he's missing in his rap war chest of rappers at his label is a female rapper, a FemC. And he discussed, they asked him like, well, how, you know, would you get a rapper? And he said, a female rapper, he said she'll have to let him fuck a couple times.
What?
Mm-hmm.
He said it's on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wonder why some of the best female MCs like that are really smart and intelligent are like, you know what, I'm good, let me go get a job, let me go do something else, because I'm trying to fuck everybody to get it there.
Yeah, I'm just saying. He said, you know, I never did it because I always thought I would end up fucking the female rapper, fucking the business up. He said above Charlamagne's cackling outburst for the answer. I'm so focused on my business, you know, I gotta be honest with you. She looking good. I'm spending so much money on her photo shoots. I gotta fuck a couple times.
You don't own her, nigga.
This rapper that he has not signed. You know, one of the things I would say, I mean, one, that's a really weird thing to say as a dude that's been accused, that rapped about sexual assaulting somebody, slipping some drinks into her, some drugs into her drink and then fucking her while they passed out. He said that in a rap. And mostly, like, he lost his Adidas sponsorship, I think, but he mostly got the slide on that. He still is around. What I do find kind of interesting though is, a lot of the shit that deals with art, like music and whether it's, and I'm not just saying hip hop, but we're talking about hip hop at the moment, but music, acting, things of this nature, people really have such a low standard of professionalism.
Right.
Cause technically you run a business, you own a business. And then when this nigga gets sued.
Right.
Or when something happens, they're gonna all turn on this woman and be like, bitch, you ain't know what it was, da da da. But real talk, why would, if you worked at, Hewlett Packard and we're doing an interview, you wouldn't be talking about, yeah, we might get a woman in our management team. I mean, she gotta let me fuck a couple times. I'm gonna be spending all this money on her training. People would be like, are you crazy, man? Like, you fired for that. But because it's music, it's like seen as a different level of professionalism. So niggas think they can get away with it. But this falls back into something I've been talking about for a long time, and I will continue to talk about it. Black dudes in the public eye just do not have the training, it seems like, to discuss this shit. Because white people white dudes who are just as fucked up, do not take this as some type of excuse for white people.
They feel the same way.
They are just as fucked up, if not more fucked up. But they just know not to say certain shit.
Right.
You just don't catch them saying shit like this. Like, you think Axl Rose wouldn't fuck somebody, like, or whatever. Pick some white dude that's in power at one of these.
Right.
One, they probably wouldn't even do an interview with some messy people.
Come on.
Like, they probably wouldn't even be on Howard Stern and shit. But let's say they were. And Howard Stern made some question about, like, well, what's it gonna take to get a female on you? They wouldn't be like, well, I gotta fuck her a couple times. Some of these niggas be straight up rapists. And they wouldn't say that shit. Cause they know it's stupid. But yeah, this is when I read it, I just was like, that's stupid.
Right.
That's why people go on there though, because they say stupid shit.
Right. And if I was a woman, they happen to be over anything sponsoring him or associated to him, cut that shit off.
If you're a man,
I mean, like,
you know what I'm saying?
Right. But like, I'm not trying to find the fucking standard so low. I don't expect dudes to walk away. If I was a woman, fuck you, nigga.
Right.
Because if men walked away, he wouldn't have said the fuck shit in the first place.
I agree. I'm just saying it would take people raising, and no one's gonna raise a real stink like this because the standards are low, you know. So as a dude and a rapper and a black dude, it is lower. People will be like, well, at least he didn't say he raped her. He just said he fuck her. Okay, so I mean, right, that's trending up for us.
Yeah, so your boss fucking you, the person in power fucking you, that you all right with that?
Right. And that's the question, and that's one of the reasons I really fuck with that show sometimes, because that's the question from the woman co-host. And one dude is you know, they're laughing and all. And I mean, I guess, you know, if she feels like that's fine, that's fine. But I don't know how that can fly on their show. But at the same time, that's their show, and that's why their shit is way more popular.
Right. Than ours. I mean, if we have a ceiling because we don't do that, I am content with having a ceiling. I'm not trying to be funny. I am content with everybody not loving us. I am fine with that. And honestly, I don't like messy people, to tell you the truth. So it's one of them things where I'm cool not being messy.
Yeah, she just, you know, like, I feel like it's a lot of pressure on Angela Yee, because you don't want to be the downer. You know, you don't want to be the one that's always has to be like, boys, guys, come on. But at the same time, like, some of this shit is just blatantly disrespectful to women, and then they just had to sit there. And it's not just this show, it's a lot of shows like this. They have a woman on, but she's not really there to have an opinion. Mm-mm. And God forbid she say some shit that makes the guests feel uncomfortable, the dudes gotta rush in and make the people feel comforted again.
Yeah, because if anybody ever listened to us over the years, we grow, we listen to other shows,
right?
It's been people that we listen to, we go, no, what, you saying some fucked up shit, we can't fuck with you no more,
right? So at any rate, Pittsburgh officials may have deflected attention from lead contaminated water. Not Flint, Michigan, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that lead water shit is all across the country. I don't know why people, it's in more places than people think.
Yeah, environmental racism too is affecting a lot of black people.
Right.
All over the country.
So that's why I ain't no rush to clean the fucking water and change the pipes and shit like that.
Health officials in a major American city downplayed dangers of lead contamination in Flint in water, even as officials in Flint, Michigan, faced a criminal investigation, according to a report obtained by The Guardian. Residents in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania were given misleading statements by health officials who deflected attention from lead contaminated water, according to the audit. The engineer who helped uncover the lead contamination crisis in Flint warned that the scandal there had undermined trust in drinking water, and claimed the Pittsburgh report was a warning that similar mistakes could be repeated.
Come on.
Including a failure of oversight by officials at the Environmental Protection Agency. The road to Flint was paved with the nexus of complacency, said Virginia Tech engineer Mark Edwards.
Nobody give a fuck.
Water utilities were cheating. EPA was looking the other way. The health departments were all too happy to let that occur because they wanted to keep their focus on lead paint. This is the one lead source that is government-owned, government-controlled, and directly affects a product intended for human consumption, said Edwards.
Right, right. The shit needs to be dug up and the pipes need to be replaced.
Five officials in Flint were charged with involuntary manslaughter after investigation accused them of not doing enough to warn the public of the spread of Legionella bacteria, part of the water chemistry struggle that resulted in Flint's lead tainted water. In total, 17 officials in Flint faced criminal charges. No one's gone to jail yet. No one had trial yet.
They won't, not under this administration. They don't give a fuck.
Pittsburgh discovered lead contamination in residents' water almost a year ago, after the water utility switched chemicals it used to control metal corrosion. The circumstances mirror those in Flint, though the city's water troubles have received significantly less national attention. I've been an elected official now for almost 12 years, and I've seen a lot, said Chelsea Wagner, author of the report and the controller of Allegheny County, where Pittsburgh is the seat. But I think this is the worst thing I've ever seen. Post-industrial Pittsburgh has remade itself as a tech hub. The city recently received attention for its willingness to experiment with companies such as Uber. However, elected officials have faced ongoing criticism after it was revealed that the water bought by residents from Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority had high levels of lead. Like in Flint, plumbing in many homes in Pittsburgh is connected to water mains with old lead lines. Those lines can transfer lead to drinking water, especially when water chemistry is altered. The Guardian has seen a draft copy of the controller's report. The health department refused to comment on the report before it was made public. However, in a written response to the report, the health department said the audit reaches faulty conclusions and is fraught with inaccuracies regarding the data presented. The health department called the report misleading and biased and potentially dangerous. Mm-mm. Wagner's review of the county health department's actions came after she discovered her own children, aged 5 and 8, had been drinking water with high lead levels. PWSA tested her drinking water and found lead levels of 27 parts per billion, almost twice the legal limits of 15 parts per billion. No level of lead is safe for human consumption.
Right, and it's one of the things where if you go back and you, I don't know if I watched a documentary or you watched a documentary with me, and they was talking about lead paint and how years ago they didn't have no laws banning lead paint. So in the brown neighborhoods, they would have lead paint everywhere, and the paint would chip off the walls, and a lot of times the children would consume it and shit like that. And lead paint affects your behavior, it affects your mental capability as you grow and all that shit. So you had a bunch of black children who was consuming high levels of lead going into the school system, and it was like, well, your children are unruly. Well, no, they're just having side effects from the goddamn lead paint.
Right. Oh man, that's terrible.
Right. Like and the thing that frustrates me, like, this shit can be corrected if people cared.
Right. But they won't care.
Right.
Yeah, maybe some people gotta go to jail, and they got, but now you gotta go see who's sick, if anyone's dying, you know. Maybe you caught this early enough to do something about it, maybe you didn't, who knows.
Right. And it's gonna be one of them things where them people going, you know, because Pittsburgh is basically going through a regentrification. So yeah, you let some of them white hipsters break out in the rash or fuck around and die, before them pipes get replaced.
Right. Publicly, the health department said our data shows that we are testing more children and have fewer children, and that fewer children have high levels of lead, the report said. But the health department later told auditor's office that such tests likely undercount the problem because testing is done somewhat randomly and not required. Further, children in Pittsburgh, the worst affected area, were actually being tested less frequently, even though more children countywide received tests.
No shit.
And children living in areas served by the water utility appear to have a higher rate of lead exposure than those living in surrounding areas.
Which is probably where they went to the surrounding, like, see, folks, nothing to see here. No, bitch, you need to test the people that are being affected.
The report also criticized specific cases. The health department argued that water has never been found to be the primary source of lead exposure for children with lead poisoning. But in one instance, high lead levels were found in the water and not followed up. Instead, the investigators blamed lead-tainted dust and took no further water samples.
That's still a problem. What are we talking about here?
Right. That's sad. That's fucked up. People gonna die.
Right. Right.
Let's see what else happened. Frank Darabont, who's an I believe he's an actor or showrunner on Walking Dead. He was a showrunner on Walking Dead. His abusive Walking Dead email sparked mixed reaction around Hollywood. "You've turned me into a raging asshole," the one-time showrunner ran it in missives revealed in his AMC lawsuit, but industry reaction is not consistent across the board. You can hear his heart bleeding for his vision as a director. It won.
Come on now.
It won.
A nigga complain about any fucking thing. You nigga ought to just be happy that somebody looked at your black ass.
Were the explosive emails that the showrunner Frank Darabont sent to associates at the AMC's The Walking Dead just another example of Hollywood execs from a brilliant excess from a brilliant talent, or an unacceptable breach of standards for conduct? A brief and unscientific survey of showrunners and executives suggested the industry reaction is mixed. I wonder why it's so mixed. I wonder why they're not strongly against his unprofessionalism, Karen.
Come on.
Just, that's just interesting, I guess. While no one defends his profanity-laced email, some condemn them more strongly than others. Some are willing to cut Darabont slack because AMC has slashed the show's budget by 25% and imposed other difficult conditions, despite the fact that he had delivered the biggest hit the network is ever likely to have. Most of these emails, released as AMC fights a $280 million lawsuit from Darabont and CAA, were written in the weeks before his July 2011 dismissal. Damn. This a 6-year run? Like, it's, brother, the show been going for 6 more years. It's okay.
Right.
Given the sensitivity, several TV veterans are unwilling to offer opinions on the records, though Sons of Anarchy creator and Darabont defender Kurt Sutter tweeted, abuse is indefensible, but having pinned my share of deadly missives at AMC_TV, TMZ and FD's mail with no context hurts all parties. Perhaps the most extreme reaction comes from a showrunner with major hit series in his credits. It literally pains me to take the side of the great corporate overlord here, he says in an email. I'm sure AMC did things wrong. This is their first time dealing with a massive, massive hit. Undoubtedly, they were in over their heads and mistakes were made, but nothing they did on the managerial side could possibly warrant Darabont's behavior here. Unconscionable. Another showrunner believes Darabont 58 was desperately trying to protect the show, but he came off like a major dick. And though we showrunners have all been frustrated at a camera operator, a director, or a writer, it's ultimately unseemly and unleader-like to talk that kind of shit, or at least commit it to writing. Darabont seems to get more understanding from execs who can hear his heart bleeding through his words on the page and his vision as a director, says the studio head. When I read those emails, I wish half the showrunners I know were that deep in the dailies and meanings of scenes.
Mm-mm. Nope, if they'd have been brown or they'd have been a woman, y'all would have hollered about how fucking unprofessional they are, and this nigga will get another fucking job.
Yeah, I wonder if he's working already. He's probably working already, right?
On another project. Yeah, yeah. I mean, not to be funny, you're a showrunner, which means people have to deal with you, and nobody wants to deal with the fucking dick as a boss. You affect the atmosphere, you affect the actors. Like, you affect a lot of shit just being a dick.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Some people do feel like the show fell off, though.
True.
So maybe y'all, you know, maybe he was the reason. Maybe the show would be dope if they just let this dude be an asshole.
You know what? I'm fine with it. You know, I'm sorry. Sometimes dicks don't need to win.
I agree.
Because if less someone, you wouldn't have everybody just accepting their dickly behavior and going, well, he's just a man and wiping his dick and showing his balls, so we got to respect him. Ooh, penis, penis, penis. Yes, penis, we'll bow down because, you know, the penis walks in the room and tells you you got to do this and do that, you run. But a vagina, oh, no, shut those lips, woman. Fuck you, dude. Fuck you.
Penis, penis, penis?
Yes. Because that's all that matters is the penis.
A white penis.
Right, a white penis. Not any penis, a white penis. Because anybody else, we would have had think pieces. They'd have been on the front page of every comic book magazine. Y'all have been talking shit about them.
Senator Kamala Harris is taking on the criminal justice reform head on. The freshman senator is attaching herself to bills that work to reform the nation's complicated criminal justice system. Senator Kamala Harris is leading the charge to bring major reform to the country's multi-billion dollar prison system. The first-term California Democrat introduced a bipartisan bill Thursday alongside Republican Senator Rand Paul that would reform how states enforce bail. The Pretrial Integrity and Safety Act of 2017 would incentivize states to rework their bail system under using a $10 million grant over 3 years. Our justice system was designed with a promise to treat all people equally, Harris said in the press release, yet more than 450,000 Americans sit in jail today awaiting trial, and many of them cannot afford bail money.
Right.
In our country, whether you stay in jail or not is wholly determined by whether you're healthy or not, and that's wrong.
Right.
Both Harris and Paul, citing the story of Khalif Browder, co-wrote an op-ed in the New York Times about the issue Thursday. Browder's story of being held in jail more than 3 years because he couldn't afford $3,000 bail has become a key story in reform efforts surrounding the criminal justice reform. Browder later hung himself. Excessive bail disproportionately harms people from low-income communities and communities of color. The Supreme Court ruled in Bearden versus Georgia in 1983 that the Constitution prohibits punishing a person for his poverty. But that's exactly what this does. 9 out of 10 defendants who are detained cannot afford to post bail, which can exceed $20,000, even for minor crimes like stealing $105 in clothing, they wrote. This is not the only such bill that Harris is tackling. She co-introduced a new bill last week, the Dignity for Incarcerated Women Act, that reforms the way women in prison are treated. She's working with Democratic Senators Cory Booker and Elizabeth Warren and Dick Durbin. That's interesting, and I mean, obviously, that I think that is good. I don't think we're gonna get prison abolishment right away, or prison, you know, whatever that people want. I do think those are laudable goals, to not have a prison, not have police, things of that nature. But at the same time, working within the framework of what we have, I do feel like there's room for improvement and people need to be improving it. Unfortunately, under this admin, it just feels so hopeless, because I know we're not gonna deprivatize any level of prison. There won't be. I mean, the prison lobby is so huge, and in the pockets of so many politicians, I know that nothing will actually be done. But I don't know, something I think sometimes we talk about these high level concepts and things that are really aggressive and really progressive, but they're also really not feasible at the moment. But something that could help people who are in jail for small bail amounts that really shouldn't be in jail, that can affect a lot of real people's lives. And I hope that we are able to support and pass that type of thing. I mean, it feels like it should be a unifying cause, but I just don't trust Republicans.
Because they don't give a fuck.
And these politicians that have like money from these lobbyists in their pockets, I just don't trust them to support the bill. But I think she's done something amazing here already, which is to get bipartisan support, which is something that pretty much went the way of the dodo about 8 years ago. So to see her get bipartisan support on something, I don't know. I hope maybe she can get they can get this passed. Anyway. And also, she might be gearing up to be for a presidential run in 2020, and this could be the beginning steps of stuff like that, because, you know, there's some people on the left that hit her really hard about some of her stances on, like, she's anti-Backpage and prostitution, because she feels like it's a place for trafficking, sex and slave trafficking and shit. There's a lot of people that are very like pro sex work that are like, no, criminalizing Backpage or getting Backpage deleted is just gonna harm people and make it worse. There's also there was another thing she had. She's in California, and they basically have prisoner inmates that do work, like literal work, like they put them out, and it's like on some good behavior type work release shit where, like, you do enough of this work, you get some time off of your sentence. And her office was taking advantage of some of that work. She claimed to not have known about it. So those are two issues I've seen brought up about her that I don't think they're necessarily national issues, and I don't know that they track with the majority of the country as far as, like, well, some other politician will come along and be like, well, I am pro Backpage and I'm anti that program. You know, I don't know if that'll track with most people or not, but I just think that she probably is gearing up for a 2020 run, and we'll see who else, because you know, the one thing she has is that she's kind of young enough and fresh enough to not have the litany of shit for people to call her out on. Like, I've only seen a few issues brought up with her, whereas any other politician, if you're gonna be as critical about them as you are about her, you're gonna have way more issues just because they've been around longer. And then she also kind of rose to prominence during this Senate hearing shit. Like, she was the woman that was the one person in the room that was aggressively challenging these racist and lying ass white men, even as other senators tried to cow her down. So she will probably be a bit lionized and seen as a hero to certain people in this country. I think it would be smart to at least put a toe in the water, because, as I said, the Democratic Party is really run by black women. So until people take that into account, I feel like they're gonna always have a losing strategy. But if black women don't support the candidate, it's not gonna happen. So in this case, black woman is definitely a person that can be on the ticket, and I think a lot of black women would support her.
True.
All right. Oh, man, I thought you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I mean, because like I said, I do like the bipartisan. I know Rand Paul ain't my favorite person. But good thing for the bipartisan, and I'm glad she's looking in the right direction. And when you're talking about like the bail and things like that, too many people, like you said, too many people make too much money,
right?
You know, for me to see a change in this, mm-hmm. because the thing is, it affects poor people, and poor people can be of any color, you know, but it affects black people in larger, it affects black people the hardest, but it affects white people more because the populace is more poor white people than poor black people, but it just affects poor black people harder than any other group.
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting, like I said, because I feel like the way shit is lining up, of all the contenders, she seems to have the freshest name, but I feel a lot like we could see in 2017 now? So yeah. We could see in 2020, but basically 2019, we could actually see what, actually, you know what, 2018. We could see in 2018 when the Democratic, nominees start, we could literally see what the Republicans had in 2016. I wouldn't be shocked. Like if we saw like 10, 12 people.
Because
a lot of people gonna feel like they have a shot since nobody's necessarily that popular.
Mm-mm.
And nobody is that much of a leader. Mm-mm. You don't, like even with Obama, he was the sitting president, so that's why you didn't have a challenge in 2012.
Right.
But after that, you still had Hillary, who everybody thought, okay, she's a shoo-in. And then, you know, people had their misgivings about her, which I think ultimately made Bernie Sanders a thing. I don't think Bernie Sanders would have been a thing in any other year, really.
Nope.
It's gonna be interesting because I feel like a lot of people think they can hit that crown. Like, now's the time to strike while it's hot, so.
Right, and in my personal opinion, you better do it while Barack and Michelle out here training somebody else and raising them up, because I think in my opinion, the second they get a person to the point where they be like, hey y'all, look, this is the person, like that's where everybody's going to kind of get behind and push, regardless of how these old white people feel. And I think that's why they constantly attack them and what they do and shit like that, because they want to quote unquote discredit them. But I don't care what you do, niggas gonna love them forever, so you might as well get the fuck over that.
Yeah, I think that bail shit though is a smart move on her behalf, like right. Prison reform shit. It's a smart move just because especially if you can get bipartisan support, it'll look like you got something done.
Right.
When a lot of these motherfuckers that are complaining that are gonna run in 2020 aren't getting anything done.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, you know, because not like, yeah, it's just they're not getting anything done. You know, Maxine Waters isn't gonna run in 2020.
Mm-mm.
John Lewis ain't gonna run in 2020. Like the people that are the lead voices in the opposition right now is Kamala Harris, John Lewis, Maxine Waters. It's these other politicians have kind of gone to the wayside. So, you know, like Bernie Sanders is talking about, you know, still believing in Trump voters and shit. Like, you need somebody adversarial that can look back and have a track record to be like, these are the things I accomplished while these other motherfuckers was running their mouth. That being said, I don't feel like anybody's a shoo-in. Mm-hmm. I just feel like she might put her hat in the ring because I think everybody's gonna think they can put their hat in the ring in 2020. I wouldn't be surprised if like fucking Al Gore was back. Like, is mm-hmm. that, is that much, it's that much of a rudderless party.
It's so wide and so many people feel like the party in disarray and it's not organized. And one thing I can say, when we talked to L. Joe Williams, she brought up a good thing. She was like, everybody wants to run, but then who's going to follow you? Like, who's going to push and be the people to support you if everybody wants to run?
Yeah, I don't know. We're going to see, man, because mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you this. If it's it's funny, right, because it was down to two candidates on the left, and the people that the person that won had the black vote. If it's fucking 27 people or 10 people or 15 people or 8 people or whatever, the person that gets the black vote is going to win.
Correct.
If it's Kamala Harris, she will win. If the choices are Bernie, fucking, you know, like I said, Al Gore, like if it's just that again, black people are going to line up behind her. You know, if it's Cory Booker, I still expect black people to line up behind her. Well, you know what? I have to see. I don't actually know how Cory Booker.
I'm not that familiar, but
yeah, I don't know how he goes nationally. Oh, like I know how. Okay. The super progressive people feel about Cory Booker. I actually don't know how people feel about him nationally.
Me either. All I know is I hear his name and there's normally something bad behind it.
Yeah, I know people don't really fuck with him, but he had his character assassinated after that Bernie shit about the medicine stuff. Cause he, you know what? That's some inside baseball, long story shit.
Okay. Just, oh, no problem.
We will see, man. We got 2 years to really wait to see that. But, anyway, I do think both of those proposals she had are good, and I hope they pass.
Yeah, I do too.
Cause we gotta start somewhere. It can't just, like, it's gotta start somewhere. And this bail shit is ridiculous. And a lot of activists are fighting about it, and by fighting about it, I mean they're making, spreading awareness. You had Jay-Z bailing out the fathers. You had Black Lives Matter Philly bailing out the women for Mother's Day. Like, this shit, anything dealing with prison disproportionately affects Black and Brown people. It's one of the reasons I don't really listen. Like, sometimes when people say shit like, well, this, you know, the Obama administration ain't doing nothing for Black people, I'm like, that just means you don't follow politics and you don't care. Because anything about sentence reform, jail reform, bail reform, drug law reform, all those things are directly affecting Black people. You might as well be literally walking into the jail and getting the Black people out yourself. That's honestly, is that, that's how much we are associated with prison in this country and how much we are criminalized for just existing. So these type of initiatives do affect Black people directly. But the politicians can't come out and just say, I did this for Black people. So you end up in this stalemate where a politician never gonna come out and be like, I'm just here trying to bail these niggas out. And I'm writing pardons for niggas to get them out. Like, I'm commuting the most sentences ever for a president. Cause for Black people, you can't just come out and say that. But I peep game. I know what the end result is. HIV sufferers have an almost zero chance of transmitting their infection to others if they receive treatment, according to the largest study of its kind.
Wonderful.
I remember when HIV in our lifetime was a death sentence.
A complete easy E. I'm not trying to be funny. Like, out of everybody, he was like, for me, one of the first famous people that got AIDS. It was literally, he got AIDS on Friday, he was dead by Sunday. You was like, well, goddamn. I mean, it wasn't that quick, but the time frame was just so quickly. Yes. And particularly in the LGBTQ community, you know, people, it was spreading, especially particularly in like the 70s, 80s, people spreading, dying. The little boy for Michael Jackson, that little boy, you know, because back then we didn't have the technology we have now. People used to get blood transfusion, they would get AIDS. People used to have operations. Orion White, thank you. Operations, they would get AIDS. It's one of those things where people just were scared to death.
Yeah, Pedro from The Real World was the first person. A lot of people, back when The Real World really meant something.
Or really meant something, right?
But he was the first person that actually we heard of that like you went through it.
Right.
Like you met him, you saw fucking Puck put a scab in his peanut butter or some shit, some weird shit, but you saw that shit and you went through it, and then bam, this dude dies. So we've seen it change in our lifetime, you know.
People talking about Arthur Ashe, but I know for me, he's outside of my realm, you know, but as far as somebody I kept up with and saw.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's a lot of people's experience. So yeah, this news, cool, good news. Thank you. Like, I'm glad. There's a lead author of this research. HIV transmission is almost zero among sufferers receiving treatment, regardless of whether they are straight or gay. No new cases of the virus arose among gay men with infected partners receiving therapy, despite them having regular sex without condoms over 4 years. The largest study of its kind found. Boy, you gotta be brave to do that. That is, cause I mean, once they say, look, we this treatment, we really think we got it down to zero. I'm like, yeah, but just in case.
Right.
You know what I mean? But
what about the condoms?
But I understand. No new cases of the virus arose among gay men with infected partners. Lead author Professor Andrew Grulich from the University of New South Wales said there was not a single linked HIV infection in those couples. Nobody became infected from their partner.
Yeah, don't they got a study out that says that it's a low rate of mothers passing it to their children now? Isn't that rate like really, really low?
I don't have that study on me, okay, to be honest, Karen. I mean, I hope so, but I don't know.
Okay.
The researchers believe this highlights the importance of prevention as a form of treatment. Halting transmission among gay men is important, as the risk of HIV infection is approximately 10 times higher with anal sex than vaginal.
Wow.
According to Professor Grulich. But we don't need, but Teen Vogue wrong for putting out an anal sex guy, right?
Come on, dog.
Risk of transition 10 times higher. But hey, you know, we don't want these kids learning how to have anal sex. Well, I do, especially safely.
Come on, some of the adults was picking up that Teen Vogue.
Right, I hope some grown-ups read it. Everybody can't listen to What's the Teen and get to school.
I'm trying to tell you, get informed.
This is due to cells in the anus being more susceptible to HIV than those in the vagina, as well as the fluid and semen in the anus lining carrying more HIV than vaginal secretions. Researchers from the University of South Wales analyzed the sex lives of HIV transmission rates of more than 350 gay couples, where one of the individuals is affected with the virus. The couples were from Brazil, Thailand, and Australia. Each couple reported their sexual activity over 4 years. The HIV negative partners were regularly tested to diagnose any new infections. Results revealed that there were no new cases of HIV during the study's duration, despite the participants having sex about 17,000 times between them without condoms. Professor Grulich said there was not a single linked HIV infection in these couples. Nobody became infected from their partner. Three new cases of HIV did arise during the trial's duration. However, analysis revealed those infections came from people not involved in the study. So somebody was cheating.
Right.
The findings were presented at the 9th International AIDS Conference on HIV Science in Paris. This research demonstrates the importance of prevention as a form of treatment, according to Professor Grulich. Such findings are particularly important among gay men as the risk of HIV transmission is higher with anal sex. Professor Grulich said, we know transmission risk by anal sex is approximately 10 times higher than vaginal sex. Yeah. Good. Some good news. Right?
Yay!
Right? follow up all this terrible news with some good news. Let's see what else. Oh, this is old, but I'll cover it anyway. Madonna called Whitney Houston mediocre in a letter up for auction. Mm-hmm. Where are all these letters coming from? I saw someone was talking about a letter from Tupac from jail, talking about he ain't fucking with Madonna because she white. And everybody was like, you know, duh. but then this letter came out and everybody was like, the fuck Madonna was on. See, this is why Tupac dropped you. First there was a letter from Tupac Shakur that was up for auction, where the rapper explained to Madonna why he broke up with her. And now there's another letter heading to auction, said by auctioneers, that have been written by Madonna, which refers to one of the greatest singers of our time as mediocre. In a letter to Jay, whom auctioneers say was John Enos, Madonna complained that Whitney Houston and actress Sharon Stone were mediocre and shared how she was feeling so uncomfortable in my own skin right now. I have made so many people angry that I'm being punished and basically made to be quiet and sit in the corner while other less interesting, excited people are reaping the benefits of the roads I paved, she wrote. It's so unequivocally frustrating to read that Whitney Houston has a music career I wish I had, and Sharon Stone has the film career I'll never have. Not because I want these women, I want to be these women because I'd rather die, but they're so horribly mediocre and they're always being held up as paragons of virtue and some sort of measuring stick to humiliate me.
That sounds like an internal problem, dog.
Mm-hmm. In the letter, Madonna continues to complain about people lacking originality and indicated that she considered herself to be the original talent. Everything I do is so original and unique. I put so much of myself into it, like my book and record, and it's only brought me heartache and pain. I don't think I can play the game to be accepted. I'm too intelligent. I have too much pride. This is a pretty big humble brag right here, dog.
Right, and that's how funny. She can't sing, if you ask my opinion. She never could sing.
She can't sing like Whitney, that's for damn sure.
Her beats was catchy and shit like that. And yeah, you paved the way. I mean, and the thing is, you paved the way for, you know, the future, quote unquote. But somebody had to pave the road for you, dog. You know, like everybody's paving the road for somebody else to go down. There's nothing spectacular about you. And all this sound like it's some internal shit that you dealing with. Sharon Stone and Whitney Houston ain't got nothing to do with your internal struggles, baby.
Right. Why you blaming Whitney, the greatest?
Come on,
what nonsense is this?
exactly what white nonsense is this? Yes, Darlene Lutz, Madonna's art consultant, was the owner of the letter, which is being auctioned off with a starting bid of $1,000. Damn, she definitely she ain't gonna be working that long. No, so yeah, she must be out of her mind.
Yeah, because my thing is, I can't speak for nobody else, but when the last time you've been popping to that Madonna, this been your jam?
I'm gonna be honest, I'm not trying to shade Madonna. I'm not gonna try to, I know she is an icon. She put in the work.
Yes, she did.
And I know when people say fucked up shit, the first recourse is to be like, dang shit, they was never shit.
No.
Madonna was a person that ran the game for a period of time. She definitely paved the way for a lot of people.
Yeah, she was a visionary. Yes.
She definitely had some really good I'd say feminist even
correct
like style, like her way of embracing sexuality and her rebellion against men trying to tell her what to do, you know, that proper don't preach thing. She was also kind of ahead of the game a bit racially, not saying like she was woke or nothing.
Mm-mm.
But you know, I remember her being on some like having the black dude in the Like a Virgin video, I think it was, or the Papa Don't Preach video or something like I remember, you know, her and Dennis Rodman being like this really alternative couple for a while and shit. Like I'm not trying to take away from anything she's done.
Mm-hmm.
But to say all that, I still have to say, you must have lost your motherfucking mind calling Whitney mediocre compared to you. This sounds like straight up jealousy. It sounds like Whitney was killing the game whenever, I don't know what year this letter came out.
Sound like, yeah,
but I know Whitney did The Bodyguard. Like, mm-hmm. Whitney, if you, like, she probably was on some, like, I'm a musician and an actress. And now Whitney get to act. It's like, nigga, sorry, but her shit better than yours. You was never in nothing, like, you weren't in anything that was that iconic to people that you was gonna get, like,
Academy Awards or some
that's gonna live with people forever. It doesn't, it's not even shade, but Bodyguard gonna live with people forever because of that song.
Forever.
Cause, and it's mostly because of that song, you know? So I don't know what to tell you, dog. It's, sorry. I hate that they put you out there on blast like that because that's a private letter.
Right.
And honestly, we shouldn't have to know that about you. That's fucked up that your friend told on you.
Correct.
But at the same time, like, nigga, you not fucking with Whitney. Like, it is what it is, dog. Just, there's no way you could have known she was gonna die and put her to the next level of icon status, which is like, how dare you talk about this, you know, this goddess queen that's dead type thing. But
come on.
But even if she was alive, I'd still be saying the same shit. You was never fucking with Whitney, dog. So I don't know, be mad.
All right.
Oh man. So anyway, let's see what else we got here. A mom was hit with death threats after tweeting her son's $231,000 medical bill to show how the current healthcare system made life-saving surgery affordable. Now, why the fuck would you have to threaten to kill her?
Because it was a woman.
All she did was say, listen, this, the healthcare system we have right now, this Obamacare, saved my family and saved us a lot of money. Why would you want her to die for that?
Because people ain't shit.
The mother of a seriously ill 3-year-old boy had described the agony of receiving insults and death threats after she tweeted their $231,115 medical bill. Ali Chandra, 33, or maybe it's Chandra, shared the photo on Twitter last month to show how the Affordable Care Act's ban on benefits caps has made it possible for her son to receive life-saving care. Ethan was born with congenital heart defect known as heterotaxy syndrome. It means that he has already undergone multiple open heart operations and will likely need more to keep him alive.
Wow.
Doctors have called his heart one of the most complex in the world. Urging President Trump not to scrap the current system with the new bill, New Jersey-based Chandra posted a photo of her son's bill. Her tweet went viral and was even retweeted by Chelsea Clinton. Within minutes, the overwhelming positive reactions turned ugly.
Probably because Chelsea Clinton tweeted it. You know, sometimes, and you've experienced this, if certain people put it out because of their followers, people would just at you and attack you. You're like, well, what the fuck? Where do you come from?
Yeah, part of the reason that I don't talk shit about DeRay and them is because every time they retweet me, somebody threatens to kill me and calls me a nigger. It doesn't matter if he retweets me saying, this peanut butter's good, or if he says,
at you sometimes.
Right. It's a whole nother level of fucked up shit out there that a lot of people aren't aware of because they just, you know, they're very fortunate and they don't care, so they won't go look up this shit. But you just look in that man's mentions and you'll be like, oh,
they on fire.
Right.
Literally on fire.
Right. And I catch the residual. Chelsea Clinton's never retweeted me, but I'm sure if Chelsea Clinton retweeted me, I get a whole bunch of fucking die motherfucker type shit too.
Right, because you have to think so many people hate her mama. So many people hate her daddy. Let's just keep this real. So anytime she puts something out there, it becomes a problem.
But even with all that, why are you threatening to kill this person?
Right.
Even if she retweeted it, what's the point of, she was called a dumb bitch and a freeloader. Some said her child wasn't worth keeping alive. Others attacked her for having faulty genetics, and someone offered up a 22 caliber bullet. She's not sure if he meant it for her or the child. Speaking to the Daily Mail online, Chandra said that many sent her violent Islamophobic threats as they assumed she was Muslim because her nickname, Ali, right. Her surname from her Canadian husband, who was of Indian descent.
A lot of people attacked her because I thought she was a Muslim descent too.
A very angry man tried to find out where I lived to see if I was working or bombing people. Chandra, a registered nurse who lives in Middlesex with her husband and two children, explained. One guy said, this is the internet. Was she not expecting death threats? That seems like a Twitter problem. I don't know why they are cool with that on their social media platform.
Come on.
How has this become an accepted part of this discourse? One user seemed to think Ethan was Mexican, which Chandra assumes is because of his skin tone. They wrote, he fought so hard to cross the border, it was all for nothing because Americans don't want to pay some border crossing Mexicans med bill. They came at me swinging, picking fights I never asked for, Chandra wrote in an essay for Vox. Strangers were telling me it would have been cheaper to make a new kid, as if anyone in the history of the world could ever replace this bright light of mine. Ethan was born with 9 heart defects and 2 left lungs. His heart, liver, Woo! And gallbladder are down the middle of his body, and his stomach is on the right side of his body instead of the left.
Wow!
He has undergone 4 heart surgeries and will continue more going forward.
Wow!
They've also made regular visits to the cardiologist, immunologist, pediatrician, and electrophysicist for his pacemaker. He Ooh. Often has to visit ER for sepsis workups and if his temperature rises above 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit. The bill specifically covered 10 hours in the operation room, 1 week in the cardiac intensive care unit, and 1 week in cardiac ward to be monitored. And her saying this led to people wanting her to die and her kid to die. Right. What's wrong with people, man?
I don't know. Say some of the same people who probably gonna die. A lot of them gonna die if this healthcare get overturned. But you know, when it's them, all of a sudden they're gonna want sympathy. They're gonna be protesting and marching.
Something wrong with people, man.
People have no empathy, sympathy. A lot of people don't have heart. They don't have heart. They just don't care anything about humanity.
Fuck it with black people, Tom. We're just fucking with those black people. We're just fucking with those blacks. We're just fucking with black people. That's right, guys. It's time to play the game that we all hate to play. It's fucking with black people. A game that goes all around the globe and finds different articles that make us feel fucked with as black people. We assign point scores from 0 to 100, intervals of 25. Today's contestants, everybody. This feels like we've been on the Hollywood shit for a while now, the last few weeks. But we back with another one. Detroit director Catherine Bigelow addresses concerns over a white woman telling a black story. Now, I've seen the trailer for Detroit, and I'm going to be honest, I want to see it. Y'all know who I am. Y'all knew what this was.
Oh, yeah, I knew you were going to see it. Yeah,
I want to see it. It's like it's about some black shit. It's based on a true story. Mm-hmm. Some niggas got fucked up dealing with some police or something. I don't even know the backstory to it, okay? I just know I need to see it. Well, apparently, It's directed by Kathryn Bigelow, who did like The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty, which are two critically acclaimed movies, but she is a woman. Okay,
and that matters.
She's one of the whites. And so people are, you know, there's a bit of trepidation around the idea of her telling this story. Let's see. Eric Dyson, I guess Michael Eric Dyson is the person who covered this for Elle magazine, and he wrote about people locally having misgivings about her doing the story. But do the white girl really know what these crackers did to us? A wizened old man asked me. It was more threat than question. I just told him that Bigelow is directing a movie about the Algiers Motel incident, in which racist white cops killed three black men, Carl Cooper, Aubrey Pollard, and Fred Temple, and viciously beat another eight, as well as two white women. Spoiler alert. What she know about niggas anyway? Later in the article, they have a quote from Kathryn Bigelow herself. When screenplay writer, producer, and sometimes collaborator Mark Bowl presented the idea of the incident at the Algiers Motel, it was right on the heels, sadly, of the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Bigelow tells me on the break from the editing room at Sony Pictures Studios in Culver City. It crystallized the need to add, from my vantage point, more volume to that conversation because it's a conversation that I need believes to be had. Am I the ideal person to direct this movie? No. Having lived with a certain amount of privilege, how can I truly, truly get into the DNA of somebody who's experienced social injustice? But she decided to not let the best be the enemy of the good. Is this a story that needs to be told? Yes. And so I felt like, well, let's just add more noise to the conversation, and hopefully there will be many more movies. As for Bigelow herself, she laments the underrepresentation of people of color as well as women in the directorial ranks, but she believes we got to keep confronting and exploring racial themes by any means necessary, you may say. Her initial impression of the Algiers Motel tragedy was, that's 50 years ago, surely something has changed, but she almost immediately recognized she was wrong. Oh no, it hasn't. I felt that from a socio-political standpoint, we're just trapped unless there's a political will to change this paradigm of subjugation. She pauses and sits back on her chair, and I feel pain. And then the sincere confession as much for herself as her fellow citizens, and shame. I don't know, man. I mean, that's a pretty good answer, I guess. 0 to 100, Karen.
From her answer, I'm not fuck with her answer. I do understand people questioning it because, you know, niggas is tired of white people taking their shit and whitewashing it and taking their shit and not telling the truth, or taking their shit and adjusting it a certain way to appease white people. Mm. So I can understand why people are mad. So I give it 25.
25, yeah. I think I'll give it 0. I need to see the movie, to be honest. I don't have a problem with white people. Mm-mm. With the idea, I guess, the concept. Right. I think a white person can do a good story on something. Mm-hmm. And it be about race. It's possible.
Correct.
I just think it's very unlikely.
Right. That's why people don't even want to give you a chance. No. So many people fucked up. We assume that you're going to fuck up too.
Yeah. I mean, you could interview the right people. You could have the right consultants on. As always, I would love to see what the people who live through it have to say, because we've seen this shit happen with a lot of different levels of privilege and shit. I mean, look at John Ridley and his gorilla movie, I mean series, and how he tanked that shit. He black, he still didn't get it, you know. So I don't know. I just want to see it. I'll give her a chance. If it's whack, I'm gonna call it whack though. Right. You know, like, it's still like, my first thought when I saw that trailer was like, holy shit, who did this? And then it was Kathryn Bigelow, and I was like, ooh, I don't, what does she know about race like that? But I also know very little about this incident. So
correct.
Maybe I'll be more lenient than somebody who's lived through it. I don't right. know. I love to see what people who lived through it or understood during that time. I love to see what they think.
Right.
Which, you know, we're going to get after the movie's out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people that play with race at your own risk. I shouldn't say play. Tell these stories at your own risk.
Correct.
If you white, because this is a something you don't have to dabble in.
Mm-mm.
But if you choose to, and you want to do it honor and dignity and all that shit, you got to live up to the scrutiny
and the expectation that people of color or any brown or marginalized group, when you do, when you step into their realm and you're not of their realm, you're gonna have to deal with the criticism, be it good, bad, or indifferent. It will come your way.
At any rate, it piqued my interest. I need to know more about shit like this. I never heard of this.
Mm-mm.
I don't know if other people know about this. Probably and have. And I just
maybe you in the last in that one area.
I had never heard of this incident. I, you know, in addition to like reading about it on Wiki or some shit, I'm sure, or maybe there's a documentary, I also will watch this movie. You know, I recently watched that documentary on the MOVE bombing in Philadelphia. I had never heard of that shit.
Mm-mm.
I had never heard of it. So, you know, these are the kind of things where I think a lot of black people, because we are still living through all this bullshit and we tired of all the pain, we kind of run away from it, which is a perfectly reasonable, valid fucking response to have. This is not me shitting on black people. I never would. You don't have to watch this shit if you don't want to, and nobody should make you feel ashamed for not wanting to live through shit that's gonna traumatize you or trigger you or whatever.
Right.
That being said, I don't mind going through those emotions for worthwhile art and entertainment and information. So I will watch it to see what it comes out like, because literally I hadn't heard of it, and I do want to, I want to know. I feel like on the one hand we catch hell for not knowing, and right. People be like, black people don't never know their history. Oh, you didn't know this, brother? Oh, you so pro-black and you don't know that? You supposed to be that and you don't know this? And I'm like, yes, I didn't know that, and I'm a person that decided to do something about it and try to educate myself. I still understand that some people don't want to know because they just don't want to live through the trauma.
Right.
And
right.
That's reasonable as well. Like, it's the same reason people don't want to click on articles where they show a black person dying. Not yep. Everybody. You know, sometimes I get convicted and I'm like, I need to see it. And there's other times where I'm like, I can't take one more second of seeing a black person, something happened to them on camera. And I understand both sides of that. Like, it's not... like when I see black people that are just instinctively like, nope, I know what's happening, I don't need to see it. Got it. Like, no one should ever make you feel bad about that.
Right. And that's me. I am that person. I don't want to see black death. I don't want to see black bodies. I understand. I turn off all my fucking audio plays. I turn them bitches off. Nope, don't, because that shit would have you in fucking tears at your job if you open up your phone. Fuck that. No, I would just see people respond to how terrible it is. I take your word for it. I don't got to see it to understand.
It's all tough to watch.
Right.
It's tough to be black. But it's all tough to watch, to be honest. Like I said, I watched the MOVE documentary and it's not a movie. It's not dramatized. It's still tough to watch. You know, I'm watching the disregard for black lives happen on the air. You know, like, I'm watching it willfully because I want to know these things. I think the reason for me that I feel convicted to watch this shit is because I do feel like there's always this impulse in our minds to forgive, forget, and move on from the reality of what this country is. And I think that sometimes has extremely negative effects, and I personally never want to forget.
Correct.
Like, sometimes when I look at the people that are saying the really harmful shit that are black, I just think it's a coping mechanism for trauma, and they're able to, they do that because they distance themselves from reality. And I mean, and for when I say harmful shit, this isn't just the people that walk around saying like hotep nonsense and shit. Those people are harmful too. But I'm talking about even people that say stuff like, pull yourself up by bootstraps, I worked hard, you should be able to work hard, racism never held me back, I just grit my teeth and go. I need those people sound like they don't know about this. And like they also run from this shit and go, oh, nothing to do with me, I don't watch those videos, I don't do that. And they just kind of lose their way. And I'm definitely afraid, probably irrationally so, of being that kind of person, because I don't ever want to feel like you can just overcome racism or it hasn't affected people unfairly in this country to the point of death and incarceration and all this other shit while I'm sitting up here being able to live good, you know?
Right. And it's also one of those things for me, just like a timid African-American center and seen the casket.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Emmett Till.
Emmett Till, sorry. Mother was saying that, and a lot of niggas stocked up this at North. You know, folks get up North, two, three generations, they was like, oh, that's some shit them down South them niggas gotta deal with, until it knocks at your door. And a lot of people only care about them and theirs. And as long as they quote unquote feel like racism does not directly affect them, they're all right. You know, a lot of times people ignore, but I am the type of person, a lot of the stuff I dip in and out. I kind of pick and choose what I watch. And I know for me, I'm the type of person, and a lot of it has to do with my age. I'm to the point where I'm like, nigga, I will never forget. Like, but I know for some people, that's their way of coping. It's just pushing it away, acting like it don't exist, acting like everything's great, acting like everything's okay until something happens. And then all of a sudden you're shocked, you're surprised, you don't know how to handle it. Your children don't know how to handle it. And it's sad, but it's not a right way to handle it, because there's no fucking, niggas don't get a manual when they're born to tell them how to deal with white folks thinking they're less than. There's no manual, there's no book, there's no program, there's no class. A lot of it is just taught generational, because people said, hey, I live to my 60s or 70s or whatever, and these are the techniques that I use. As you get older, you have to learn your own techniques to deal with and get around these things, because I guess my thing is, it's a two-way street to that, because I understand what you're saying, but for some people, they go too far on what you're saying. They go to the point where it's almost devastating, you know, in my mind, where you have to have a balance. You can't be heartache, pain, sorrow all the time. You have to take mental breaks. You have to step away. You have to go to your happy place. You got to do other shit. You can't be there all the time. And the thing about people being there all the time, not all, but some of them turn around and look at everybody else like something wrong with you for not watching certain things as me. Because I know for me personally, I'm turned off. Like, I've never watched 12 Years a Slave. The biggest reason why I didn't watch 12 Years a Slave, because niggas like, it's the saddest shit ever. I'm good. I know how I function. I'm good. But like I say, everybody responds differently. I guess I'm in the middle. Like I said, I dip and dab. I don't have to visually see things to understand the hurt, to understand the pain. Like, I know that is there, and I believe you. I'm not the type of person when niggas say shit going, I don't believe you. I believe you.
Mm-hmm. I feel you. I just need to know. I can't speak for anybody else, but I feel robbed. I feel like our history has been robbed of us. I feel, and I don't mean like our past in Africa and shit. Mm-mm. I'm talking about stories from the 80s, 70s, 60s. People, like, I feel like everything got swept up under the Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, in most people's school, that's all you learn about civil mm-hmm. rights. And then it's on to the next chapter. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm still learning shit, and I'm 38, and right. and I'm not a person that's run from this my whole life. So I'm still learning shit. So I have a thirst for knowledge, and I'm going to continue to use it. Now the thing is, and I want to doubly stress this, a fucking movie is not necessarily the best educational tool. There's plenty of ways to learn. I just had literally never heard about this. This is the first time I heard about this Algiers incident. Algiers Motel incident in Detroit, and I'm like, I need to see it. If it's bad, I'll let you know it's bad. Right. I have no problem with that. If it's inaccurate, which all movies are to some extent,
right,
and it gets roasted, I'll read all the think pieces about why it's inaccurate. But I personally feel there's a conviction inside of me, and an anger almost, at how much we've been robbed. And I feel like, to some extent, I want to get it back. I want to get as much knowledge as I can while I can. You know,
and that's true. And one thing I can say about you, and I've said it before, you have kind of challenged me to dig. It's not the fact that I was running away. It's the fact that, oh, I know that's hurting pain. No, I'm good. I ain't got to see it. You know, I was really that type of a person. Like, I am aware. I acknowledge things, but I didn't have to see it. I didn't have to visualize it. I was like, I'm good.
Yeah, but you know what? I feel like I talk about this all the time. We are superheroes. So I don't feel shame about it.
No.
Like, it's not like I have empathy for the people that went through the shit. Right. That's the kind of pain. But more than that, I have pride. You know, when we saw Hidden Figures, I was mad that we weren't taught about Hidden Figures.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like, as much as I love the movie, and you can hear it in our review, I'm like when we got to the negatives for the movie, it's like, well, nothing really with the movie was too negative. You know, I did hear a couple of like, oh, this incident didn't happen that way and all this shit. You know, I get it. It is a movie. I recognize that. But I'm more mad that I didn't learn about these women when I was in junior high school.
Right.
I'm mad that black girls that could have been pushed towards STEM opportunities probably never saw themselves reflected in that. So they were like, why would I want to learn about science, technology, engineering, mathematics? Why would I want to, what good is that going to do me? But if they had known there were people out there like this that changed the fucking world, they might be a little more excited. So I do want to know about that stuff. I love seeing that with Layla, you know?
Yeah, I do too.
Like I said, I think sometimes because we don't want to be traumatized, we kind of group everything into the same category, but, and keep it, I mean, Detroit looks like it's just going to be all sad. I'm not trying to, but at the same time, like 12 Years a Slave is also a story of perseverance, and it's a story of, you know, ingenuity and survival and shit as well, you know? A story of a family that never gave up on a family member. You know, it's like, and honestly, the only people that should be ashamed is white people. Cause to me, the fact that you are people that could do this to another people, that says more about you than it says about me, homeboy. Like, y'all the ones that should be ashamed in these movies, you know? But yeah, there's so much around it and the trauma around it. Cause we don't talk about it. We don't share it. Everyone's ashamed. White people ashamed because their ancestors did this shit. Black people ashamed because, hey, I'm living a good life right now. Why I gotta worry about that? Don't we got enough going on in these streets? You know, like, everybody's supposed to be ashamed, and I want to take away the stigma about it for me, because I'm not gonna be ashamed of something I didn't do.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna be ashamed of what you did to me. That's not how this shit work. You know what I mean?
Correct.
And, like I said, I recognize and agree and understand that the trauma and that people want to avoid it and want to just think happy thoughts and shit. That's fine. But I just saying, for me personally, you're not going to make me ashamed. Like, that's my battle cry.
And that's true.
I'm not going to be like, I ain't watching no slavery movies. The fuck I'm not? Why not? You know what I mean? I didn't do shit.
Nope.
Like, I was spending my $12.50 to eat my popcorn and be like, these white people ain't shit. And I'm gonna do it every year that they put a movie out. Like, as long as it look good, I'm gonna see it. You know? So it that's not on me.
No, it's not. And I don't know. I don't feel shamed.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I'm not saying this about you.
Okay.
Like, this is not a debate we're having. Like I said, I literally understand and empathize and would never shame a black person who don't want to see these things.
Correct.
You know, I feel passionately about it for myself, but I'm speaking for me. I'm not gonna be ashamed. These niggas are not gonna make me ashamed, because I used to feel that way. That's why I'm saying, like, this isn't about other black, this is only about me. I remember when Black History Month came around and they would show fucking Eyes on the Prize on repeat,
right
in front of this class, and I would be in these academically gifted classes. Mm-hmm. I'm one of two, maybe three black kids in the entire fucking class,
right?
And I have to watch them water hose black people, and I used to feel a tremendous amount of embarrassment and shame, as if I did something wrong. You know, like damn, man, I come from people that got fucked up. This is fucked up. My people, y'all fucked my people up. And I feel like y'all just gloating in this. Like, y'all get to go live this privileged white existence, feel unattached to this, and I feel attached to it. Now, in their heads, it probably wasn't even that way. I feel like most of the white kids in there felt ashamed and embarrassment of the fact that this happened in this country, and that white people did this to my people, and they felt sorry about it to a certain extent. And they were, you know, like, they would be nicer towards me rather than meaner towards me. But still, it was like a, because we never talk about it any other month of the year, mm-hmm, at any other classroom,
right,
it becomes stigmatized to where this is a negative experience that I'm having, and so are these white people having a negative experience, everybody having a negative experience. And instead of being educational, it just becomes about the emotions of being ashamed. And I think that shit sticks with black people forever. There's fucking people that are angry when they hear about, when people hear about the idea of Confederate and get mad off tops. I feel like that shit came with us forever. Like, that's been with us forever. That's like, that shit started a long time ago before anyone thought of this stupid ass show. I say stupid, the show might be great, I don't know, but the point being,
mm-hmm,
there's a reason we reject this shit outright up front. And part of that is, I think people probably can relate to what I'm saying. There's a level of shame and stigmatization that we deal with when we discuss slavery in America, and when we dramatize it and put it on TV and put it in documentaries, and we put the civil rights and all the stuff that black people go through in this country. For some reason, it's like we become ashamed of being the victims of this shit almost. And that's what I push against.
And I think it's purposely and strategically designed that way.
Me too. But yeah. I have to mentally fight against it. Because I'm not just going to be like, well, it's designed that way. Fuck it. I'm not seeing no black pain movies. No. I'm not ashamed. I'm not looking away. I'm not flinching from this shit. I want to know. You know, I'm not saying you have to, like, blow your buzz and everybody got to go see it. Rod Morrow wants to go see it. Has nothing to do with you. So, yeah, I will be going to see Detroit, but that's because that's how I feel. Like, I never want to feel that way again.
That's true. And I think for me, and I know this might sound crazy, and I, you know, the older I get, the more I've loved myself. But I'm gonna tell you right now, the pride that I have in my race and my color and my people, I think within the past 5 years, it's changed.
Right.
And I'm gonna keep it real. A lot of it has changed because of the internet. A lot of it has changed with being around black activists, black feminists. A lot of it has changed from looking at people that look like me and seeing the things that they have to deal with. You know, I didn't put it like this. I didn't realize the sacrifice. Put it like this. I saw Martin Luther King. You talking about Martin Luther King and the people in the marches. You see that shit. But it wasn't, like I said, until the last, you know, five to seven years that I realized the shit that they went through. Like I don't think it hit my heart to the point that I respect what they do now even the more, because I completely understand the sacrifice and what they had to deal with, because I have these close relationships with people, and I see the scrutiny that they get, and I see the racism that they deal with, and I see the things that they deal with. Like, I'm to the point where I am in my own unique way. Everybody's not going to be an activist, but in their own unique way, they can fight against the system. Mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like me wearing my shirts, me, you know, coming out and saying I'm a feminist, me actually, it's something as simple as me wearing my hair natural. Those are my ways in my little world to fight against a system that's strategically designed to oppress me and make me feel like my history is not valid.
Yeah, nah, your love is revolutionary. Your joy is revolutionary. Caring for yourself is revolution. Like, all this shit is revolutionary. It's, you know, like when I read the book about the black women under slavery dealing with white women that were the mistresses of the house, black women loving themselves is revolutionary. Like, everything's designed to keep that from happening. Black women taking pride in themselves. Black women dressing nice. As much as people talk about materialism and y'all niggas are buy some Jordans, that shit is actually still revolutionary, because none of this shit was designed for you to ever wear a nice pair of anything. None of this shit was ever supposed to grace your back, grace your feet. I know it's capitalism and all that shit.
But that's true.
I hear you, but the system was designed for you not to even participate in that. So a lot of shit is revolutionary just by the very nature of its existence, you know? Being educated is revolutionary. Mm. Starting your own business is revolutionary.
Right.
Some of this shit was just not for you, and I think black joy is revolutionary. So that's why I said, you will never catch me knocking black people who are like, I don't want to go through this. Like, I don't knock black people that want to look. Like, I see people do that shit where they're like, oh, so y'all won't watch the video of Philando Castile get killed, but y'all will watch a world star hip hop video of two people fighting on a bus. And I'm like, I really don't like watching either one of those. But to be honest, I understand somebody that says, I'd rather watch a fight on the bus than watch a nigga get killed by the cops. I actually can relate. Yeah. And I think we need to stop judging that.
Right.
Because they human too. And if they don't want to deal with that shit and be crying at their work, in their office, or in their car, or wherever, maybe they just don't want to cry. You know, maybe it's just not time, you know? Like, I remember I cried when I was at home and the closing arguments in the Trayvon Martin case. Like, his attorney made these arguments that really humanized Trayvon Martin, and I remember crying even though I knew he was gonna lose, because I said that's the best argument you can make for the humanity of a black kid in America. That's it. Like, they're still not gonna convict this man. And I knew they wouldn't the whole time, from the second we talked about on the show. What I say, they will not convict this man. But thank God for Al Sharpton, thank God for the people that went down there and stirred up a fuss that got this shit to go get national attention, so we could at least get a trial, because they weren't gonna even put this motherfucker on trial. Mm-mm. You know, his parents didn't know what he was for a few days. Like, that's the kind of shit that you know, it's still going on, and I understand why people don't want to watch that. You know, it's not like I watched the whole trial. I wasn't gonna watch it. I just happened to flip to the closing arguments and was like, I'm glad I saw that, but at the same time, it made me cry. It made me sad. It's not like this shit is fluffy ponies and dragons and shit. This shit is serious. Right. You know? So, yeah, I completely relate, and I understand why people be like, I'm good. I don't need to see that shit, and I'm happy. But like I said, I'm gonna go see Detroit. You know, I want to see Confederate. I want to see, all this shit, man. I want to see it. You know, like, for me personally, these are the things I like to know. You know, especially when people try to challenge us historically, and maybe that's part of the reason, is because I get in these conversations sometimes where people try to act like shit was better back then, or shit was worse now, or shit is different now, or mm-mm. all that shit. And I like to be like, well, you know, did you hear about this? You know, and sometimes I feel bad. Like I said, I feel angry sometimes when I hear about something I didn't know about. Mm-hmm. When I hear about Black Wall Street and I'm fucking 35, I get mad.
Right, dog.
I'm like, how did I not know that already? Why isn't this in a book that is taught in every school in America?
Right, Dak, like that shit. I've never heard about that till I became right. an adult.
So if I go watch that documentary, or if there's a TV series based on it, you goddamn right I'm gonna watch it. What, I'm wrong? No, I'm gonna watch it. It's, you know, it's not morbid or anything. I just want to know. You know, mm-hmm. I feel angry. I feel robbed. I feel cheated. I feel like we need... The biggest thing they can take from us is our knowledge, and then that shit is the stuff that enables you to be stupid, like some of these celebrities that get interviewed and say stupid shit, and we like, how did that nigga get so stupid? Because they not educated, and they don't care about the history, so they just feel like, I'm doing good right now, so why the fuck would I care about this racism shit? Why y'all gotta always be marching in the street?
Right, like they doing it just for your health.
Right, it's that kind of shit. Like, when you hear somebody say some stupid shit in the interview and they black, that's what I be thinking. Is like I be wanting to ask them, so what about the move bombing? What about Black Wall Street? You know, what about the church bombing? What about, you know, like, what, like, where are you at on this shit? Because I feel like for the vast majority of them, they're gonna be like, man, I don't know nothing about that. Why you bringing that shit up? They ain't got nothing to do with me. You know, so I that's what I think about. But anyway, as I said, with her interview answers, I don't feel fucked with, to be honest.
We will see. Like yeah. If them will be trash, people will let you know immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I am a young black rich. If that don't let you know that America understand black matter these days, I don't know what it is. Don't come at me with that dumb, man. My life matter, especially to my.
Yep. So. Anyway, but yeah, I watched the one about the move bombing on PBS. They put it on, it's on Amazon. I had to pay for it, but I watched that last week, man. Glad I watched it. You know, it was wild as fuck. I talked about it with Justin on the pregame, but, glad I'd rather know than not know.
Correct.
Motherfuckers bombed a building. That's the wildest shit you ever gonna see in a fucking city, in a city. Not like the Branch Davidians out somewhere in Waco. These motherfuckers bombed a building in the city. Straight up.
Yeah, sent a warning and said, niggas, y'all better leave.
And that right there draws a direct parallel to how they got rid of that dude with the robot bomb.
Come on now.
To me, like, that's the kind, I'm glad I know about it, because now I can make that comparison and be like, has shit really changed that much? I don't know.
It has not. I don't think a lot of people fail to realize history repeats itself, so... I don't know what I should know, and if I don't know, I'm trying to do a better job at challenging myself to learn. But yeah, it's the same, because y'all niggas set a robot in there to blow that nigga up.
Yeah, like I said, glad I know. An 18-year-old South Burlington High School student is facing, he's a graduate, he's facing a felony unlawful mischief charge for allegedly spray painting racist graffiti on the athletic field in South Burlington High School on June 6. Tyler Austin, who graduated in June, was cited Friday to appear on the charge in the Vermont Superior Court on August 26. He was released after being cited and remains free until the arraignment. South Burlington Police Chief Trevor Whipple issued a statement Friday saying the pending charges came after a lengthy investigation involving numerous interviews, evidence collection, and forensic analysis. He did not say what led to Austin. Isaiah Hines, the recent South Burlington High School grad who led the push to drop the Rebels nickname, was said to be the target of the graffiti, and that the graffiti referred to him by his name as a dumb nigger. So Isaiah Hines is a dumb nigger, I guess, was the graffiti, because he didn't want them to be named the Rebels anymore, because guess what the Rebels are? The Confederates. Police have been mum on what exactly the graffiti said and who was the target. I'm again not repeating nor confirming what was written, Whipple said. The wording will be public record once an affidavit is filed with the court in the next few weeks, he acknowledged. Hines told 7 Days that he was relieved to hear the pending charges. I guess it's nice to have some sort of like closure, he said. All this black kid did was say, man, yo, this name is racist, I think y'all should change it. And now to prove that it's not racist, you call him a dumb nigger.
I don't understand how that goes.
What's the logic there?
It's not logic. Yeah, racism is irrational and illogical. People don't understand that.
Yeah, I'm trying to follow your logic, but how you gonna be like, I'm not racist, you stupid ass nigger?
Yeah, a lot of people say that, particularly on social media.
Yeah, that seems, maybe I'm tripping. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
Come on. So calling them thugs, just call them niggers. Just call them niggers.
Just call them niggers. Whipple said he decided not to pursue hate crime charges after studying Vermont's law. A hate crime has to have a crime directed at a person, and this is a crime directed at a property. As troubling as it is, it doesn't qualify. You said my name on the graffiti and called me a dumb nigger. How's it not directed as a person?
Because he put it on the grass.
So wait, if he spray painted me, then it's a hate crime? Like, he got a spray painted on my chest?
Like, apparently so. And then it still might not be a hate crime.
How is that not a hate crime, dog?
Because nothing's a hate crime in this country no more.
That's pretty much the definition of a hate crime. You said my name and called me a dumb nigger. And you spray painted it in public on property. You hate crime me, bruh. Still, Whipple faces charges, said the charges are an indication the community won't tolerate racist displays. This racist-based graffiti is not acceptable, and we're hoping that this sends a message that it's not acceptable and there are consequences, he said. Zero to 100. Yep, that's 100 for me. Mayoral candidate tells opponent supporters to go back to Africa. I'm sure he's not racist, though. Probably doesn't have a racist bone in his body. A candidate
even got a black friend.
I'm sure he has several black friends and doesn't even see race.
Come on, so calling them thugs, just call them niggers.
Paul Kunjimi, 60, a Republican, long shot in the race for mayor of St. Petersburg, Florida, seized the headlines when he launched in a tirade that mentioned former President Barack Obama and brought up Florida to Africa flight plans to the advocates of his rival Jesse Neville, who is white. What?
This is white on white crime.
Oh my God.
What is happening?
What's the logic to this?
I don't know.
Listen, you white people supporting this white man, go back to Africa. But I've never been.
Not even from there. In fact, my people were from Europe.
I'm South African. I don't know. Mr. Neville, you and your people, you talk about reparations. Oh, wait. Can I play this? All right. I know we're almost at the break. It's 45 seconds. Maybe I'll play it when we get back, if it won't start right away. And it won't. All right, I'll play it when we get back. Give me 1 second, everybody. I'm going to switch over sessions now so we don't get cut off. But that is some bullshit. Why don't you and your supporters go back to Africa, buddy? They love saying go back to Africa. None of us been to Africa, motherfuckers. Y'all took us from there, and I ain't never been. This my home. I got more roots here than y'all do now. I'm like, y'all go back to Ireland or wherever the fuck you from. You probably know some people from there. You got great great grandpas and shit. I don't know nobody from Africa.
Right, everybody came on a boat. Unless you Native American, you came on a boat, dog.
Right, fuck you talking about go back to Africa, bitch. You go back, go back to Africa and look for some more slaves. That's y'all fault. Y'all got us.
Right,
y'all didn't keep the receipt. Talking about go back to Africa, shit, better pull out a 90-day receipt, motherfucker. This is the warranty is expired on us. You can't send us back. Mm-mm. This ain't Walmart.
No return.
Yeah, they don't go like that. I bought these niggers 457 years ago. I'm just wondering, do you guys accept returns or maybe even exchanges on some new niggers? I take some new niggers if you got them.
You got a newer model.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to send them back to Africa and, you know, y'all keep the money. I mean, I'm going to keep the money that I made off of them, but, all right. Yeah. Let me see if I can put this nigga on screen so y'all can see the rent.
What's the going exchange rate?
Right. Do y'all have, I will pay the unboxing, the reboxing fees on these niggas. Can y'all just sell some open box niggers? Cause, I just want them to go back to Africa. I don't care how they get back here, but, look, we bought these niggas straight cash and, I don't have the paper receipt. But I do have the receipt that we had in America when we sold them. So maybe we can work something out. Is it showing?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here he is.
And y'all, Mr. Neville, you and your people, you talk about reparations. The reparations that you talk about, Mr. Neville, your people already got your reparations. Your reparations came in the form of a man named Barack Obama. My advice to you, if you don't like it here in America, planes leave every hour from Tampa. Go back to Africa. Go back.
Side of the Ricks. Non-factor.
Non-factor.
See the real enemy. Non-factor.
Okay. Let's go back to Africa, guys. You got Barack Obama. We got our reparations. What y'all so mad about?
And you know what? A lot of white people feel just like him.
Yep, he just had the courage to say it.
Come on now, he just wasn't willing to tell the truth.
Yep. He said, I never met Jesse Neville until last night. It's obvious he's a self-hating white man. He also said he was not politically correct, as if y'all needed to know that.
And it wouldn't be sound like he was actually talking to black folks, because I immediately heard some get out of here. I was like, oh yeah, this, she talked to some black folks,
right?
We don't hold the responses back. We let you know immediately how we feel.
And now we know why Bernie Sanders ain't want to talk about reparations.
Come on now, you know, a lot of times that's the between kind of black, not in general, black folks and white folks. White folks, you do a good job, they kind of meet you after the show, tell you how good you did, shake your hand and tell you how great. Niggas will let you know right then and there in your face if they like what the hell you did.
Coco Austin, who you guys may know as Ice T's wife, I think that's his wife.
Yeah, Coco.
Yep, shout out to my shirt, Ice T. She vigorously defended herself on Saturday from online backlash for getting cornrows and christening the hairstyle the Coco Swoop.
Not the Coco Swoop. That's hilarious. And she get 100, but that's hilarious.
Really, Coco? You invented it? You just gonna get all the credit?
Mm-hmm. The same hairstyle most black people been getting since they were children.
All that fake ass and fake titties and all that shit. Hey, you really just gonna think you invented the hairstyle?
Right,
by yourself.
You ain't gonna do it, but tear your hair up, like especially if it's a real hair, because most white people's hair, when they get braids, they go to Jamaica and get that shit. That hair knots up because it's their hair literally can't hold that, and it tangles and twists and shit.
Mm-hmm.
You better be careful. I hope you got weave in there or something, baby. You gonna tear your hair up.
I'm sure some of it's weave. Everybody want to be a nigga. Don't nobody want to be a nigga.
Come on.
First of all, bitch.
Coco said, you know, this is her new hairstyle, the Coco Swoop. Some people online apparently saw cultural appropriation in Coco's decision to name the braids after herself, but she insisted she gives sobriquets to all her hairdos. So I guess she names all her hairdos. In the first of two Instagram videos, Coco said, so recently I got social media's panties in a bunch because I did braids to my hair. This is so stupid. I can't believe I'm talking about it, and I believe it shouldn't be turned out to be a race thing. Oh, is that what you believe?
Didn't nobody ask you what you believe, baby. You called it the Coco Swoosh, and people are looking like, well, honey, niggas been getting this hairstyle since they've been two. What are you talking about?
Right. They love saying some shit like, I can't believe y'all so mad about this. Like, nigga, well, now you mad.
So recently, I got social media's panties in the bunch because I did braids to my hair. This is so stupid. I can't believe I'm talking about it, and I believe this shouldn't be turn out to be a race thing. But this is what happened. I did my braids, and I called them the Coco Swoop. I name all my styles that I do to myself. These are called the Coco Swoop. The braids before were called the Bo Derek braids. And it's a Cocoism. I've always done it. Why can't we all rename hairstyles or braids? That sounds so stupid. Why is everybody claiming something they shouldn't? I know braids have been around for thousands of years. Don't you think I know that? If I want to wear a pineapple on my head, then I should be able to wear a pineapple on my head and call it the pineapple Coco Wop. I don't know. You see where I'm going with this? Why is everybody hating? Let me add to what I was saying. People rename hairstyles all day long. Look, Beyonce. Beyonce, she does this hairstyle, and now it's the Lemonade. But no one's going to get mad at her, right? So, at the end of the day, this shouldn't be a race war. This should be a human thing, right? Everybody should be able to do it. It's a human thing. Give that a shot. Not a race war.
Who named Beyonce's hair the Lemonade? Is that a thing?
The Beehive let me know. I didn't know her hairstyle was called Lemonade.
Right? I don't know about that, Coco.
But this just goes to show you that no one reads the captions underneath pictures. Otherwise, you would understand that this is not an issue. It's something that I do. It's a Cocoism, okay? Now, to the love out there, thank you, thank you, thank you. I see it. I see all the comments. You know, power to you guys, because I get this much love and that much hate. But sometimes just got to come in and say something about it because it's so disgusting. That we should be like loving each other instead of hating on each other because of a hairstyle.
Listen, one, that ain't no type of apology. I don't know what the fuck she's talking about. Mm-hmm.
She didn't come to apologize.
Right. Here's the thing with Coco, though. You are a person that is famous for copying the body of a black woman. We're not gonna pretend that it's something else, because it's not. All the implants and the titty and the booty shit and the way you dress and being around a hip-hop icon as your husband or fiance or pimp or whatever the fuck the relationship is, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, I literally don't know, because right, I don't keep up with that shit,
right?
But I know they had a TV show together. I don't know if they married or not is what I'm saying. And I know Ice-T credits himself as being a pimp and always talking, dropping game. I don't know what the relationship is. All that shit to say, man, you can't want to be part of this culture and not understand this culture. You can't want to be part of this shit and not take the critique of black women seriously. You can't do it. You can't just chop it up to haters. You never sounded whiter than you just did with the whole, like, these haters are coming for me and you know how it is, we just should be loving each other. Like, dog, just be like, my bad, I shouldn't have named it, I didn't know that that was a thing, I didn't mean to take, I'm not trying to take it away from anybody, my fault. The end.
And you know what, I'm gonna keep it real, and I'm just, this is me, I don't care about what you do to your titties, what you do to your ass, but you, I don't care what you do. The problem is once you cross the line and you name it or claim that you've had it first, and then that's when most black people don't pay her ass no attention. Most right. Black women care less what you do, care less who you married to, who your husband is. Like, just do you, boo boo. Don't nobody care. But you know, when you come with a hairstyle and you call it a swoosh, and people going, well, bitch, them just regular ass braids, what are you talking about?
I mean, you known for being the white, the pog.
Come on,
like, that's your thing. It's like, you the known as the white girl that got a black woman's body. Like, that's your claim to fame. The accentuating it with the hairstyle, you know, even the caption on her Instagram photo, I call them Coco Swoop. You don't even talk like that. Like in that video just now, you just sound like you, listen, I call them the Coco Swoop, okay? Like, you didn't talk like that. You were super duper proper right now. Like, just let it go. Just be like, my bad. Is it that hard? I mean, it's not like everybody gonna fucking forgive you. I get it. There are people that are gonna be like, fuck that bitch forever. But most of them already feel that way.
Yeah, they
but
do.
But the least, for the people that fuck with you, the least you could do is be like, yo, my bad, dog. I really didn't mean that as a swipe at black people. My fault. You know, I won't say I invented this hairstyle anymore.
Yeah, no, nobody even care about you calling your hairstyle names. Like, you know, most people, the average person probably don't even follow you. Like, I mean, I know she has a following, but you know, most people only said something, her name only crossed their lips is because of this.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Just take the L. Sometimes you gotta just take the L. You're not gonna win.
Mm-mm.
And you're definitely not gonna get everybody on that. We just seem to love each other. Shit, nobody's falling for that. Mm-mm. Just be like, my bad. I mean, unless you don't give a fuck, then just don't say nothing, because you still can ride this white thing on out. Just be like, I don't give a fuck. Fuck them people and move on. Most people gonna side with you anyway. You white. You know what I mean? Most people gonna be like, leave that woman alone. She didn't do nothing. What? She can't get her hair done? I already know that's what most responses were. So just leave it at that, man. You know?
Yeah, and just do you. But you know, like I said, it's some lanes you just don't need to cross, and you could have stayed over there where you were.
Yeah, she said, oh, and by the way, I name all the braid styles I do, even hairstyles with no braids. It's a cute thing I do. I have many weird Coco-isms. Yeah, you got roasted for it. That's all. You know, especially if this is the first time people seen you name your hairstyle on Instagram. You know, if you say you name them all, but if this is the first time, you know. And of course, Ice-T came out and was talking shit to people. Someone said he's in the sunken place if he thinks people are mad at Coco for wearing braids. Dig deeper, bruh. He said, what are you, I don't even know what this W word is for. Something are you talking about? You sound something, I don't know, stupid maybe? LOL, I honestly can't believe you motherfuckers are still talking about braids for 3 days, LOL. Bitch, kick rocks. I'm surprised you can read to another person who said no one has a problem with the picture. The caption fucked it all up. If you don't get that, you're a F something? Fuck boy maybe? I don't know. Fuck nigga? And then he replied, bitch, kick rocks. I'm surprised you can read. LOL, lucky she didn't put Afro Puffs in her hair and call them Coco Puffs. The world might come to an end. LOL, who gives a fuck? Yeah. I mean, to be honest, he had the best response.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I said it. His response is better than hers. Because he just did what I said you should do, which is to be like, fuck it. Rather than to sit up there and try to appease everybody, because you already did the infraction and nothing you say is gonna go back. Like, you might as well just be like, fuck everybody then. Because you can just ride this out. You're Ice-T and she's Coco. Y'all can just be like, who gives a fuck? I knew y'all was gonna get mad when I did this shit.
Yeah, they're both of y'all.
Right. Yeah. I ain't saying it's right, but, you know, them niggas don't care. You ain't gotta fool me into thinking y'all care. All right, let's do, how much time have we done? Shit, 142 already? Where does the time go? I always start these shows like, man, I ain't gonna be fucking with these niggas all night. And then,
that's on you, y'all. If y'all wanna know why the show be 2.5-3 hours, that ain't me.
Fine, we'll end the show right now. Karen says we gotta go, guys. Sorry, but she don't want y'all to have no more show. I was gonna play Guess the Race. I was gonna do some sword ratchetness. But, Karen, said, fuck y'all niggas, so. I guess until next time. Oh, okay. Now you're shaking your head. Okay, so you don't want to be the bad guy. That's what I thought.
Yeah, I'm letting them know I don't control the time.
Right, right. Now that it's time for some Guess the Race. That's right, it's guest the race time. Now that it's time for some guest the race. That's right, it's guest the race time. That's right, it's time for Guess the Race, the number one game show going across all of podcast land. We read or play news articles from all over the globe, and we ask our contestants today, Karen in the chat room, to guess the race, because I love you niggas and will give you more show. And Karen don't give a fuck.
Now, I never said that, black man.
You said it. We heard them. Okay, Coco.
I did not say that.
You did. We heard through the lines. We can read through the lines.
You better stop hating me with my Coco Swoosh. Hater.
A young mother who suffered a minor injury during a sex game died from a rare flesh-eating disease when medics failed to spot the condition.
What?
Care assistant Katie Whittleson, 24, told doctors she had hurt her wrist after agreeing to be restrained by her boyfriend in the bedroom. She was diagnosed with a simple strain and sent home, but had to be rushed back to the hospital the following day when her condition worsened. The mother of one from Castle Vale in Birmingham was actually suffering from the flesh-eating bug necrotizing fasciitis and died from the bacterial infection shortly afterwards. Katie's partner, Chef Dean Smith, told the inquest that the couple had been living together for 5.5 years and that she had a young child. On New Year's Day this year, Mrs. Whittleson went to work, but later sent him a photograph of her wrist, saying she was in a lot of pain and could not move it. She went to Good Hope Hospital in Sutton Coldfield, but was told she suffered a sprain and went home with painkillers. The following morning, she was still in pain and developed blisters. She was rushed to the Heartland Hospital, but suffered a heart attack in the ambulance.
Wow.
Ms. Smith told the inquest that his girlfriend had initially thought she had hurt her wrist when she was restrained during sex. She said, "I do not remember much about it. It was not anything we've ever done before." Assistant coroner Emma Brown explained that Ms. Whittleson had attended Good Hope A&E department before midnight, complaining to a nurse she suffered extreme pain in her left wrist. She explained that she was unable to feel her fingers and the pain was spreading up her arm. The coroner said her temperature, heart, and pulse rate were all abnormal, therefore she ought to have been observed every 30 minutes, but despite seeing two doctors and having an x-ray, she was told she had a sprained wrist and was discharged.
And that's why whenever you kind of go to the ER like that, they run fucking every test, like that's literally because they literally set themselves up for a lawsuit, because they're going like, why did you send her home? And then she died.
The coroner told the hearing that Miss Whittleson should have been kept in the hospital undergoing major surgery. As a result, there were clear failures on both part of both of the doctors. She said they flagrantly ignored the policy that there was for the very situation Katie found herself in. Her early warning score was 6 and should have resulted in regular ongoing observations and further investigations. These were not carried out. If Katie had remained in the hospital, it's clear that her death would have been avoidable. These mistakes amounted to gross failure to provide basic medical attention. Katie's death was due to necrotizing fasciitis contributed to by neglect. The coroner said there could be other explanations for the initial injury she had suffered, but the most probable one was when she was restrained. After the hearing, Miss Whittleson's mother, Pat, paid tribute to her beautiful daughter and said she had been devoted to helping others. Her husband, David, said the family intended to take legal action against the trust over the negligence. Well, I'll be damned.
I sue you too. I lose my family member.
Well, guess the race, Karen.
Oh, white.
Karen's going with white. Let's see what the rest of you motherfuckers say in the chat room. 50 Shades gone wrong. White. Aw. White, 50 Shades of World War Z. White. White. I don't know any black people with this. White, white. First a killer dick, now a killer position. Sent home, black, white, white. The correct answer is white. And one person got it wrong. I don't know what they were thinking. Say is it not showing up screen yet?
It is.
Okay, yeah, she was white, y'all. Real white. And I feel bad for her. I mean, somebody gotta take care of a kid,
right? So now her husband is a single father. Now
if that's her boyfriend, I mean husband, that might have just been her boyfriend. I don't think I read that was her husband.
Oh, I know they mentioned a husband.
Did I? Okay. Nah, boyfriend, Dean Smith.
Okay, so she may have been married at some period of time. Okay.
I don't know. But she got a young kid, 5-year-old daughter. Some freaky sex play laid to death, y'all.
Yeah, because I know at the end you said her husband is good. Thinking about pressing legal action. Probably her husband, and then they probably got divorced.
That's some straight up, like, Final Destination death shit.
Mm-hmm. That's who you do.
A fake cop was arrested while trying to pose as a real cop.
White.
And he's tried to, and he stopped an actual Miami police officer. A security guard who poses as a Miami police officer has been arrested after attempting to pull over a real cop. Milton Morales Perez, 46.
I take that back.
Pulled up alongside Officer Kenia Fallett as she drove along Southwest 7th Street near 13th Avenue at 7:30 p.m. last Wednesday. Morales Perez had rolled down his white Ford Mustang window and flashed a silver badge at Fallett, a spokeswoman for the Miami Police Department. He had ordered her to stop using her cell phone to pull over. Police stopped the car. Fallett had been driving an unmarked vehicle but was in uniform at the time. Realizing Morales Perez wasn't a real cop, she called for backup and two more officers arrived at the scene to arrest him. When asked why he had been impersonating the officer and had a badge, the Hallel security guard said that he had seen Fallett using her cell phone while driving. He added that he had stopped her as it is very dangerous to be on the phone while driving. Morales Perez was charged with one count of impersonating a police officer. Guess the race.
Morales Perez. I'm going to go black.
Morales Perez, Karen's going black. Let's check the chat room.
No, wait a minute. Perez. Well, Nina's black and she's Perez, but I don't think I'm gotta go against you, Nina. I'm gonna go Mexican or Latino.
All right, chat room says Latino. No, let me see your papers, Latino. Latino, top flight security and border patrol, Latino. He thought he was a white Mexican. And what does this last one say? I'ma go with Euro-Cuban, not to be confused with Afro-Cuban. The correct answer is, everybody got it, Latino. Yeah, he was definitely Latino, Karen. You pulled that one back from the brink. You almost fucked that up.
Yeah,
two Latino last names and you still almost said black.
Right?
What was you thinking? Is it showing in the chat yet?
Yes.
There he is, guys.
Curly hair.
Yeah. Ain't that some shit? I wonder how many other people he pulled over on some bullshit. Mm-hmm. And who knows what else he be doing to people, man. I don't trust nobody faking like the laws.
Mm-mm.
That's even worse than being the police. Faking like the police?
Come on.
You could do anything to somebody, man.
And there'd be no record of it. Shit. Right. I mean, you could barely get a record with the real cops, but shit, at least you got something.
All right, let's go to the bonus round. Double the points and the race. That's right, double the points, double the race, and the bonus round to guess the race. So far, Karen is actually 2-for-2. Pulled it back from the brink to be 2-for-2. Let's see if she can keep it up. All right, bonus round time. Tampa Bay Times, another Florida story. Largo, Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri fired a patrol deputy on Thursday after a photo service that shows him boasting about almost shooting someone. The photo posted Sunday on the visual messaging app Snapchat shows Deputy Austin Callis, 23, with the caption, "Nothing like almost shooting someone to set your head right, LOL. God, I gate people with knives." I believe he meant to spell hate instead of gate. Gualtieri said Thursday, the photo raises doubts about Callis' mindset on the job. "If you make that kind of statement, you're not going to be employed here as a deputy sheriff because it calls into question your thoughts and your motives, and certainly leaves a deputy in the agency in a very bad situation if something were to happen in the future." Bingo. The firing marked the second time this week that questionable behavior by Pinellas deputy had come to light. On Tuesday, the Tampa Bay Times reported that Sean Pappas, a former training division corporal, resigned from the agency in February after investigators found a trove of racist, sexist, and pornographic images on his phone. The incident Callis referred to in the photo occurred Sunday morning, according to a report. Callis responded to a domestic violence call at a home in Dundon. The dispatcher notified him that a woman involved in the call had armed herself with a knife and was alone in the garage. When Callis arrived, a 36-year-old man who called the sheriff's office told him another man, 55, was fighting with his ex, with his 26-year-old girlfriend because she had lost the keys and cell phone. On his way out of the house, the caller said he heard objects being thrown around the room and thought they were pushing each other. Callis wrote in the report that he told the woman to come outside multiple times to no avail. A backup deputy arrived and they found the woman at the garage door entrance. The deputies ordered her inside at gunpoint and then told her boyfriend to come out of the house. The woman told deputies she never armed herself with a knife and deputies didn't find weapons on either one. Callis didn't arrest anyone and closed out the call. On the same day, he posted the Snapchat photo. The sheriff's office first became aware of it on Tuesday when a high school friend of Callis reported that she was concerned about some Snapchat photos he posted of himself both in and out of uniform, according to the investigative file. So who knows what other stuff we didn't see. She also told the agency that Callis and his girlfriend of 2.5 years had broken up because she was cheating on him and that Callis was drinking heavily. So she might have saved that woman's life. Around the same time, Florida Department of Law Enforcement analysts noticed the photo circulating on social media along with the comments that had anti-law enforcement sentiment, according to an email from FDLE to Tampa Bay area law enforcement agencies. As the photo made the rounds, Gulteri said Callis contacted sheriff's office lawyers to ask for legal advice on how to take action against the woman who reported him. Basically, he was in cover yourself mode, the sheriff said. He was placed Wednesday on administrative leave. Internal investigators spoke on several occasions with Callis, who confirmed that his friend said about his relationship, but said he didn't drink to excess. They offered him help through the employee assistance program, and he declined. Callis could not be reached for comment Thursday. Leading up to his hiring in November, Gulteri said there was nothing of a concern in his psychological exam, polygraph test, or background check. He was still under what is typically a year-long probation, during which employees are not afforded the same disciplinary process as permanent employees. But Gulteri said he doesn't imagine that would have made much of a difference. Callis, who patrolled North Pinellas County, never said anything to mitigate Gulteri's concern about the photo, which the sheriff said he interpreted as, if you shoot someone, it's going to make you feel better. That's what it said. The sheriff said there are other possible interpretations of the photo, but several factors went into his decision to terminate Callis: his lack of an explanation, the fact that he went to an agency lawyers for a situation inappropriate for their help, and LOL in the caption, which signaled that to Gulteri that it wasn't a sobering revelation. It's not my role to provide people with plausible excuses for what happens to be very serious misconduct, he said, and to give them a reason not to be held accountable for it. Guess the race of this officer. Austin Callis.
White.
Karen's going with white. Let me check the chat room, see what you guys think. No, it just depends where you move in Florida. No, okay. White, he is white. Wanted to join the roster of cops who got away with murder, white. His woman got the Coco Swoop, white. Ha! Got in trouble because he didn't kill, white. Super open about using lethal force, white. White, he was afraid for his life, white. Whitey McWhiterson, white. This our place, boys. White. The correct answer is white. Nobody missed that one. And he was white as fuck.
Yeah. No!
He also took the picture like it was one of those like dating app pictures or something. You know, like he was trying to be a little sexy with it or something.
Oh shit.
You see it? Is it showing up? Like, look at that picture. Don't it look like he got them come here the eyes?
Right. He got the little phrase you can do on Snapchat.
Hey girl, let me commit a homicide and feel better about myself.
Oh lord.
On duty.
On duty.
I like to shoot a shot and then shoot a shot up in you.
Oh no. Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm into. Killing people and then killing that pussy.
Oh no, that's not the same. Oh no.
All right, let's do sword ratchetness, guys. Oh. A man attacked his mother's boyfriend with a samurai sword.
Oh no.
A mother and her son were both arrested late Tuesday night after the son attacked his mother's boyfriend with what the police say was a samurai sword. Police say Dennis Anthony Burgess, 29, was arguing with his mother's boyfriend. Burgess went towards the man with a samurai sword, striking the man several times. Police say that Burgess raised the sword over his head like a baseball bat and told the boyfriend that he was going to cut his head off. The report says despite being hit multiple times, the man was not hurt. How is that possible? Mm-hmm. Teresa Ann Hartzell, must have been a reverse blade sword, I don't know, 48, grabbed the sword from her son and hit him several times, cutting her finger. So everybody was hitting each other. Mm-hmm. He learned it from you. You okay? Yeah. Hartzell and Burgess were both charged with assault with a deadly weapon. Both were given $500 bond.
Mm-mm-mm. White?
Everybody? I don't have any pictures. Okay. That shit happened in Charlotte, though. It's WBTV that covered that. Mm-hmm. All right, man. Tomorrow is 7, guys. Are y'all ready to talk about it? Are you ready to be about it? Because we're going to have Miss Smart in the house. Me and Karen gonna be in the house, and it's gonna be on.
Yes!
Drones time, y'all. All right, we'll talk to y'all tomorrow. Until then, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah. Mwah.